Blog Talk Radio.
I said, friend, let me get that for you, as he rolled his wheelchair toward the door of the restaurant I was going in. I helped the old fella through the door. I could see that his hat said he served in World War II. I shook his hand and said, friend, let me buy dinner for you. He said, son, I wish everyone felt like you do. I watched a tear roll from his eyes. He said, grace. And as he sat there and he talked to God, my heart was in my throat as I heard him ask we'd all find a better way. And he said, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They've taken the U right out of the USA and broke the right arm off of the Statue of Liberty. Put out the torch that lights our way. Then they say that it's all politically correct. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. Said, son, for God and country, I lost my legs on Omaha Beach. But that's nothing compared to what thousands lost, and we continue being free. Once again he said, well, if we keep on going the way we're going, we're headed for hell on a fast train, not knowing how we got there or how we're gonna come back. They're stomping and burning our stars and stripes, not giving a damn for the sacrifice of life that protects that very right. Yet they say it's just the way that they protest. Help us stand up now, God, or there won't be no America left. America lives. America.
Suggested.
Oh, yo! Welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. I am your host, Jeremy Johnson, and I am here with my co-host, Chris Bikerson, and our other co-host, Daryl Gibbs, has got some truck issues, so he's going to come on a little bit later. And our producer, Kim, had some other issues she had to take care of, let's put it that way. Chris, how are you doing tonight, brother?
All right. Well, you know what, Jer? It is a new year. To me, I am going to try to be more professional, and I'm trying to use a more professional-sounding voice because, and there's a reason for it. I have a formal announcement to make. I am officially announcing my candidacy to be the Speaker of the House, and my campaign slogan is, I'm not Kevin.
There's something schooly around here.
I like your campaign slogan. You're not Kevin.
I'm not Kevin.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's nice, easy, simple. I think you got a shot here. I mean, hell, they've taken 9 votes already, and Kevin McCarthy doesn't have the votes after 9 votes. This is unprecedented. It hasn't happened since 1850. But I don't know. It's interesting to watch this go down. It's kind of a shit show, but hey, whatever. Welcome to America.
You know what? I can try, and if that doesn't work out, way things are going in the NFL, I might be able to make it on the team. I don't know. It's crazy. That was too soon? Maybe? I don't know.
I was kind of thinking the same thing. Maybe I got it. Maybe you got a shot. You got a shot, Jeremy. I think 2023 is going to be my year. Oh, I highly doubt it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a really great show lined up for you tonight. We had a couple guests, but we still have one. John Breyer is going to join us, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, but he has one heck of a story to tell you about what happened to him after he took the COVID-19 vaccine and the process that he went through and still goes through. His story is there's so many stories I've heard just like his. Let's just put it that way. And every one of them are unique and remarkable, all in the same sentence. Every one of them deserve to be heard because of what's going on in our country. The second one is a story about a 17-year-old Sean Hartman from Canada, Ontario province, I believe. His dad actually went to the Toronto board to talk publicly, and I'm going to get into that whole story. His dad's name is Dan. Dan was going to call in, but due to an unfortunate circumstance, he's not able to. But he did message me before the show, and I told him then, Dan, we would be happy to be your voice and Sean's voice tonight. And moving forward, I did put in the chat, if you go to our chat, it says, please check out Answers for Sean on Twitter. That's at Answers for Sean. And you know what? I just realized I made a mistake. When you put Answers, at Answers for Sean, it's the number 4. So it's Answers, the number 4, and then S-E-A-N. So go check out his Twitter. And honestly, it's heartbreaking. I went through it a little bit last night again. That's the second time I've gone through it, or now third time now. It breaks my heart because this dad, Dan, he just wants answers. And he's being censored, silenced, and ridiculed like you wouldn't believe. And I certainly understand the censoring because I was talking to Chris, today or yesterday, whatever I talked to you about, when this all started and they announced that remdesivir is one of the official treatments, I started doing a little research on remdesivir. And I've come across a study in the Congo that happened in, I believe, 1998 or 2008 or something like that. I can't remember now, but because I got too much information in my head. But after the study was complete, remdesivir caused 30 to 35% of everybody that it was administered to die from kidney failure and other major organ failure. That should have never been an official treatment for COVID-19. And then we find out later that putting people on a ventilator with COVID is also a big no-no. From certain doctors that I've listened to, they have been censored also. And the thing we want to get into tonight is the fact that people that come out and tell their story are ridiculed, they're beat down, they get called every name in the book for trying to tell their story, and they get accused of, you're just doing this for money. What money? Nobody that I know that is warning people are making any money. They're just simply trying to tell their story. The fact of the matter is these same people are getting censored on big tech, and the answer I get from the opposition, I'll call them, is that's because they're spreading misinformation. Now, remember before this pandemic, the word misinformation wasn't a thing. I never heard it before. Disinformation, misinformation. Now, all of a sudden, anytime that the official narrative is questioned, it's suddenly misinformation or disinformation. Sounds similar to Nazi Germany, wouldn't you say, Chris?
Well, yeah, and ironically enough, I mean, the terms misinformation and disinformation have been in play for a long time, but historically they were kind of limited to the intelligence community, where that was how they would sort out, you know, what was propaganda being put out, you know, versus what actual information, correct information was. And, you know, what you're saying, I just got to add this. You're talking about people accuse the people like Dr. Malone of trying to get attention and make money. Actuality, the opposite is what's happening. Everyone that's telling you it's safe, it's effective, they're all directly or indirectly getting paid by the pharmaceutical companies. Whether it's Don Lemon on CNN being ordered not to say anything bad about it because Pfizer is spending billions of dollars in advertising per year on the mainstream media networks, right? So they're getting paid to tell you it's all good. It's all roses and rainbows and it's great. And the people that are stepping forward and telling you it's not good, they're not making money. They're putting their medical licenses at risk. They're putting their jobs at risk. They're putting their reputation at risk. They are being publicly scorned. They're not taking money from Big Pharma, and they are putting everything. They're putting their entire livelihood at risk to tell you that this is not good for you. And people will laugh at them. Like, literally, there's a used car salesman standing in front of the room telling you that this used car is great, and if you don't believe me, just ask this guy that I'm paying $500 a day to be here. He'll tell you how great it is. And as soon as a mechanic that's not getting paid stands up and says, yeah, that car's not good, everybody's laughing at him. You're giving credibility to the people that are getting paid for their opinion, and you're shooting down the people that are putting everything at risk to warn your stubborn ass.
Yeah, no, and that's what's happening. It's not just happening in the medical community. It's happening with private citizens. It's happening, in the case of Dan Hartman with his son Sean, we're being censored. Anybody that's sounding the alarm, we're being belittled. Like I said, they're trying to discredit everything that we're saying with their same propaganda. And it, you know what? I see that John's on the phone. Let's just get right to John. I want to get right to the story, his story, because we're going to have a pretty lengthy show tonight because of, you know, John's got a pretty long story. And I want him to be able to explain it in detail so people can maybe understand. And he's got a little swing to it at the end, you know, that he, you know, he prayed to the good Lord. And we'll never deny anybody to talk about that either. So without further ado, let's just bring John on right now, and we will start this off on a good note. Hi, John. Welcome to the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, Chris. Hope things are going well for you.
Yes, yes. Now, we're excited to have you on. And did I slay your last name when I say it's Breyer?
you are one of the few people that have actually pronounced it correctly. It was Breyer, just like the ice cream.
Chris, do I get one of those applauses, like the, you know, the fake one, or?
Quick enough.
Oh, yeah, you're not quick
you know,
enough?
The name, the name's kind of spelt a little differently there, you know, B-R-I-A-R-E. And out west, all my relatives go by the pronunciation of Breer. And when my father was in the Air Force during the Korean War, you know, whenever they'd call him, they'd say, you know, Bob, B-R, and then he just changed it to Breyer because no one could say Breer. They said Breer, Breari. So, but so on the East Coast, we go by Breyer. On the West Coast, they go by Breer.
Well, I was trying not to over-enunciate it like Breyer, you know, so I just say Breyer.
Exactly.
Yeah. So... No, but we do appreciate you coming on, John, and taking the time out of your schedule to come on and just try to inform the public of what's really happening. And basically what I want, I have your article up that's on your Twitter that you have posted. And for those of you listening, if you want to go check out John and read his story, I'm going to tell you, I went through it a little bit last night. I didn't get a lot of time because I had to get up really early this morning. But it's at put at John Breyer, and go through his story. It's right at the top in his bio. You're a very interesting fellow. I got to tell you that, John. Man, you've really gone through a lot in your life, and the J&J vaccine was just a another one of those life experiences, I'll call it. But let's start off with this, John. When the COVID-19 the COVID-19 pandemic hit, let's start where. How did you and your wife feel about it? What were your concerns? What were you, being fed from the mainstream media? Just tell us your general, the general consensus between you and your wife of what the discussion was in the household.
Sure. And I think it's probably similar to the majority of Americans, what they experienced at first, right? So, you got the Hong Kong riots going on, right? Chinese government was in big, big trouble. And then, right, that was kind of dominating the news. And then all of a sudden, there's this talk of this virus that is spread out of Wuhan, right? And all of a sudden, all the media is showing people just online just dropping dead, right? So all of America saying, whoa, whatever's going on in China, this isn't good, right? The more and more, right, China went into lockdowns. I had started writing at that point that, it had never happened in America before, that lockdowns were coming here in America, that we don't know what is coming out of China, how bad this thing is. The press is saying it's a 10% death rate, that, they're showing all these people just dropping in the streets. Today we know a lot of them were actually actors paid by the Chinese Communist, party at the time. But so we know that we really didn't know what was coming out of China, because it's just the communists. You never know what's coming, out of their mouths. And you just know it's not true. So it wasn't until the virus actually started going to, hit Japan and South Korea, when people started getting an idea of what was really happening with this virus, that people weren't dropping dead in the streets. And so the lockdowns had started, in America. I was actually out in Arizona metal detecting. I had everything put in place. I had, knowing that the lockdowns were coming, I stocked up on a bunch of food and toilet paper and paper towels. And, so I did some metal detecting with my brother-in-law out in Arizona. And we were out in the desert. And, we got back to civilization. And there's lines of cars outside gas stations. And we looked at each other and said, something's going on. And so we got to the hotel, and sure enough, everybody's locking down everything. And, and so, we got on the plane, and you know, when we went out, there was nobody wearing masks. And when we flew back from Arizona to the Boston area, everyone's wearing masks. So at that point, the frenzy had started. And then, you know, so we're just watching the information, and it became, to me and my family, it became very obvious very quick that this disease or this virus was hitting the elderly very hard. All right? And so, you know, if you were overweight, you know, if you were diabetic, if, you know, things along those lines, there were a lot of risk factors that the people were having issues with. And most of the deaths were occurring in those places where they were confined, in like nursing homes and hospitals. And so, you know, came back, everything's on lockdown. You know, I think all of America was on board with the initial lockdown, right? Let's get an idea of what the heck we're really looking at. And then once the data started coming in, we were, you know, me and my family were like, this is no worse than when the bird flu hit, and actually might even be milder. You know, healthy individuals are not dying from this. And so things kind of played out throughout the year. We lived our lives, you know, like we do every day, you know, try to live it to the fullest. The number one asset we have, each of us has, is time, right? No wealth in the world has ever bought an additional minute or second of time to our lives the way we normally live it. And, you know, we'd go into the stores and we'd get the dirty looks because we weren't wearing the mask and this and that. And so the foundation was already being laid by those who were going to exploit this crisis of the division, right, divide. And the mask was their new symbol. You know, the way the Make America Great Again hats were the symbol of, you know, Trump and supposedly the far right, well, the mask was, this was, you cared about others. And if you weren't wearing a mask, you were a bigot, you were a racist, you hated everybody, and, you know, you should be condemned to hell. So that was, that was the mask argument that started going on. And people forget, right, when this thing first came out, Fauci was all over the TV, and so was the Surgeon General. No, mask's not going to make a difference. Not going to make a difference. No, no reason to get masks. And then it's just a matter of months. Oh, my God, you need a mask. They forget.
Oh, you need
it for you. Exactly contrary information on that. I'm a chatterbox. So interrupt me anytime.
No. You're fine. I just want to warn you before we continue that we do have like a 1 or 2 second delay. So if all of a sudden somebody jumps in and says something, that's probably based off of something you just got done saying a second ago. That's talked on here. Just so you're aware of it, because it does tend to startle people a little bit. Like, oh, did I? You know, no. You're not doing. You just keep on doing your thing, and we might add in a little commentary while you're talking. But just continue on with whatever you're saying. You know, from here on out, just so you know that we're not trying to interrupt you. But
all right.
Since I did interrupt you, so you guys, you and your wife were part of, you know, like I, as a truck driver, every time I had to go to a shipper receiver, they required that I had to wear a mask, and I really had no choice. If I wanted to make money, I had to comply, which I'm a big one with the no, don't comply.
Yep.
So I understood like the healthcare workers, if we're going to fast forward just a second, and then we'll kind of rewind, but when they were mandated the vaccines, and they're like, what do you do? Well, I was prepared at that point when they started talking about mandatory vaccines that no matter what happened, I was not going to get that vaccine because there was no long-term studies done. And I held true to that, and I even to this day, I will not get no mandatory vaccine. You're not going to tell me what I'm going to put in my body unless I feel comfortable with it. But that's beside the point. So you and your wife, rewinding now, you were part of the crowd, like myself, that if I could get by with not wearing a mask, I didn't wear a mask.
Exactly.
I went into stores.
Exactly.
Yeah. I went into a truck stop down in Laredo, Texas, and I didn't have a mask on. Everybody else had a mask on. And right away, security was right on me. He said, you need to go get out of here. You need to have a mask. I said, I have asthma. Oh, I'm sorry. And he walked away.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, that's all I had to say, that I have asthma? So really, does this make any sense to anybody? Right away, John, I just thought, something's not right here.
That's exactly it. You know, the more studies that came out, and from legitimate scientific institutions and scientists themselves, you know, showing how small this virus particle was, and that an N95 mask had no effect on it whatsoever. All right, but so at that point, right, all that information is just it's being overlooked, it's being ignored, right? Because those who decided, like Rahm Emanuel, right? Remember Bill Clinton's, or Obama's, he was mayor of Chicago, and then, right? His motto was never let a good crisis go, without taking advantage
of
it.
Go to waste.
Yeah, never let it go to waste. And so you could see that narrative that people were exploiting it. And then the money started flowing, right? The hundreds of millions of dollars for this, the tens of thousands of dollars if they treated COVID patients with this, and they got more money if they put people on respirators. And so this is all occurring before the vaccines. Now, I'm all for vaccines. I believe vaccines have played an important role in preventing a lot of diseases that annihilated, decimated peoples. I mean, whether it was polio, right? The pox. There's so many good vaccines out there. But those vaccines were done pretty much in a traditional way, right? You kill the virus when you know it's dead, right? You inject someone with a little bit of the dead virus, and your body makes a response to it. And when you got the polio vaccine, you didn't catch polio, you didn't spread polio, right? Every vaccine that I had growing up, I never got the disease. I never was afraid of getting the measles because I had a measles shot. And so when they were developing this vaccine, that was the talk line. And so people like myself and my wife and the rest of my family were very, very much looking forward to the vaccine. And then Trump came out and called it the Trump vaccine. Right? And believe me, I voted for Trump. I voted for him again. You did have to bury me to vote for Hillary Clinton or Joe Biden. All right, so I trusted them that this was going to be a vaccine that was going to be proven safe, that was going to be just like all the other vaccines I had taken and my kids had taken throughout their lives. And so the vaccines are announced, right? Some of them 100% effective against death and hospitalization. Then it was 98% effective. So now we have to go to January when they start administering to the general public, because it was like late December. It was the final 2 weeks of December. I think it was of 2020, or maybe it was 2019. I'm losing track of time as I get older here. But
2020, I believe you're right.
Healthcare workers first, and then they opened it up to people that were over 65, and the mad scramble was on. All right, so now I have an elderly mother and a stepfather. My stepfather is in that risk category for COVID. Big guy, he was a lineman for 9X for years, this guy's a bull. But he was in the risk category for the age and the conditions. And so, they had driven down to Myrtle Beach because at that point it became very obvious that the Northeast states were an absolute train wreck with their health care because they were ignoring all these scientific studies that said, right, you don't lay a person on their back that has COVID, right? If someone has here's another thing. If they have a fever, they weren't giving them antibiotics because they said the fever was caused by the virus. And antibiotics don't work against viruses. But the data had already been out there that it wasn't the virus that was killing people. It was the secondary infections. It was the pneumonia. It was simple things such as, an ear infection or strep throat. So they went down to Myrtle Beach for the winter, left New York and Massachusetts, and I went down because, and started working the phones with them to get them the vaccine. All right. At that point, you know, it was, you know, this is going to save their lives still, you know, and I'm still thinking that this is just like every other vaccine out there. And I kind of give you this background because it's important, kind of starting where I started getting awake.
Absolutely. I want to know what changed, what it started with, and how it changed your mindset through the process to where we are today. That's that, yeah. And I think the audience deserves to know that also. You know what I mean?
Yep. So we go down there, and I'm working the phones, working the internet, because they didn't know how to do it. Most of the senior citizens didn't really know how to access the appointments. So the whole vaccination system that a lot of states had set up was not designed to help those who are at most risk. And that was the first thing that blew my mind is, you know, there were no call centers that seniors could call into. It was everything over the internet. Now, there's a lot of 85, 90-year-olds that just simply don't know how to navigate the internet. So that was the first thing that was typical government, right, here to help. So I'm working the lines. I get them the appointments. They get their first shot. Now, mind you, they're isolated there in Myrtle Beach. They've got their little, you know, snowbird condo. They're not interacting with anybody. They're isolated. We get them the shot, and they seem to be okay, right? They both had sore arms. So I wait, you know, about 5 days. They look good, and I leave. I drive back up to Massachusetts, and literally, you know, I get here, I sleep the night, and my phone rings at 7 a.m. the next morning that my stepfather has COVID. And I was like, what? I mean, impossible.
He literally just got a shot, right?
He had gotten a shot, like, so it would have been 7 days before he had his first shot. And now he has COVID. And so I said, okay, well, you know, I made sure they had the oxygen pulse meter because that's the number one indicator where if you're going to have an issue with COVID, your oxygen level starts going down, right? And, you know, he had some digestive issues, but he seemed to be okay. But I know also by the research that it was roughly 3 to 5 days after infection is the toughest time, where if someone's going to go south, that's when they're going to go south.
Right.
So he seems to be okay, right? He's developing the cough. He's developing a fever. And then my mom gets it the next day. She gets COVID. Now, she certainly, he wasn't contagious enough to give it to her because it was, remember, it was a 14-day incubation, right? I mean, back then, that's what they were saying. But we really know that most people that are going to get COVID, it's usually between, what, again, you know, 2 to 5 days after exposure that you start, you know, actually getting COVID. So she gets COVID. And so now my stepdad is really starting to go downhill. And the following day, my mom calls and says, we got to get him to the hospital. He's just not doing good. You know, his blood oxygen was down a little. And I said, well, don't do a thing yet. Because at this point, I'm scarred by how the Northeast states like New York and Massachusetts had handled their COVID patients. They were killing them. It was the healthcare system that was killing the patients up there. And so I called the hospital there in South Carolina, and I said, okay, if he comes in, what are you going to do? Well, you know, we'll give him a COVID test. I go, you've got COVID. And we'll put him on oxygen, and you know, we'll just monitor him. And I go, well, where do the monoclonal antibodies come in? Now at that point, right, there were two antibody treatments. There was remdesivir. I didn't want them to touch because the research said, right. Now Trump was pushing remdesivir. I'm like, no, that's. The data is not good on remdesivir. It'll destroy their kidneys and stuff. But then Eli Lilly had quietly.
I literally, John, before you got on here, I literally talked about remdesivir, and I've been screaming from the mountaintops from about July 2020 when they said that they were going to use remdesivir as the official treatment, as one of the official treatments. I looked it up. and I started digging deep, and I found a study done in the Congo in 2018 or 8 or something like that, where 30 to 35% of the patients that were administered remdesivir died from kidney failure and other major organ failure. And so I started screaming from the mountaintops, there's something not right. But go, yeah. I apologize for, yeah, go ahead and continue. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, so now in the meantime, I had decided to start tweeting and activating my social media, and I published this thing on monoclonal antibodies on my Facebook page, and was railing against, again, the Northeast states because they had not approved them. But meanwhile, South Carolina, and so happens a lot of your red states, did approve the Eli Lilly one. And so everything I had been reading about, now it was still early. It was still there was still a risk on this, right? Still experimental. But I know my stepfather was in trouble because of the risk. He's had issues, you know. I called the hospital and said, when do you do the monoclonal antibodies? And they say, oh, we don't do that here. I go, what do you mean? Oh, no, that you have to. That's an outpatient thing. And I go, well, so at what point does the hospital never makes the move to give someone a monoclonal antibody? And so I was like, all right, Mom. I call my mom back. Mom, he's not going to the hospital. So I found the hospital that actually had the clinic set up, you know, outside of Myrtle Beach where they were doing the monoclonal antibodies. The beautiful thing about South Carolina is technically you didn't need a prescription to get it from your primary care provider. And so I called trying to make an appointment for them, explain the situation to Snowbirds, and the initial response from the clinic was, well, you know, their primary care physician needs to call it in. And I go, they're from New York. This primary care physician probably hasn't opened a medical journal in the last 10 years. And he's going to just do what the CDC says in order to cover his ass. And so I said to the head nurse there, I said, technically, there's no reason why you couldn't be his primary care physician for this, could you? And there was a pause. And in that beautiful southern accent, she goes, you know, well, dear, I guess you're right. And so she booked the appointment for him, went in the next morning, had the infusion, and the best text I ever got was the following day. I got a text from him at like 7 o'clock in the morning and said, I am 98% better here. His cough had stopped. Those monoclonal antibodies worked for him. And so immediately I put my mom into it, did them for her, and it worked for her. So the Eli Lilly ones worked. So now, right, we had that situation, and I'm just thinking, I'm still trying to figure out how the heck did they catch COVID when they were isolated, right? And everyone's response was, oh, geez, you know, they must have got – someone that was given the vaccines must have had COVID. I said, but they were all PCR tested, these people. They were all – you know? So I start getting my doubts now on the COVID-19 and the vaccine. So I start looking at the VARS data. And I start noticing all these people – that get COVID 7 to 10 days after their vaccine shots. And so I'm following this. And so I'm like, I told my wife, there's no way, right? And then you start seeing in the VARS database all of these horrible, horrible instances that people are reporting of both the Moderna and the Pfizer, these mRNA vaccines. I was like, there's no way I'm doing that. And so then they talk about, hey, there's a third option coming, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. It's not an mRNA one. It's more like the traditional vaccines. I was like, Karen, you know, if we're forced to get one, that'll be the one we go with. And she was, you know, I wasn't really inclined to get a vaccine, but she was nervous. You know, she watches the mainstream media and the, you know, the Fox News and the CNN and, you know, everyone's talking. And we still had hopes for the vaccines. And maybe it was a fluke what occurred with my parents. So the age, because, again, they're still dispersing vaccines by the age at that point. And so we make our appointment. We go to our local, I think it was CVS Pharmacy or Walgreens, and we get our J&J shot. She gets her shot first. Yeah, just like getting a flu shot, right? No problem. I get my shot, and literally after I got up, they had you walk around the store for like 15 minutes. Probably within a minute or two, my face started tightening up. And I was like, you know, Karen, does my face look weird? And she said, no. But I could just feel it was tight, so I'm kind of moving my jaw around. I'm just kind of, you know, stretching things out. And, you know, it was okay. I mean, we're guys, right? I mean, you know, we cut our hands or slice ourselves. We use duct tape or you know, instant glue. We don't go to the doctors or the hospitals for, you know, things like that. And so the face loosened up a little, and so we went home. And throughout the day, we were just kind of joking. Oh, you know, you're a zombie yet, right? No, we're not. You know, we were making light of the whole situation. And the first day, none of it. I didn't even have a sore arm. My wife had a sore arm. So then the next day, wake up, you know, in the morning there, and I was a little tired, you know. And then, you know, a slight headache occurred, you know, and then, you know, then the sore arm, you know, started kicking a little. Had two cups of coffee in the morning. Told my wife I was going to take a nap. You know, slept a little while. Got up. My headache all of a sudden started getting worse. And then I said I was going to go for a walk. You know, because like when I had, you know, gotten flu shots, and I always just kind of get the shot and then go for a long walk and, you know, try to just get it out of my body as quick as it can, you know. And so I went for a walk, you know, in the Douglas State Forest there. Had no issues, you know, not out of breath. From the drive home, which is about 15, 20 minutes, starting to ache a little, you know, at the joints. But my headache was really starting to get bad. And then so I came home. I said, you know, I'm going to take another nap. Well, 2 hours later, my wife wakes me up. And then now I'm feeling a little warm. Not feverish, but just warm. And, you know, it was nothing to be concerned about. You know, I ate dinner, had a little bit of nausea, seemed to go away. And then all of a sudden, my ears start ringing. And, I mean, it was a constant ringing. I just couldn't get rid of it. So you know, at 7 o'clock, I go to the bathroom. As I walk into the bathroom, I notice my left eye is twitching up and down. You know, the lid there. Now, I don't even feel it. I didn't even realize it was doing that. I'm just kind of staring at myself in the mirror and saying, well, that doesn't look right. You know, I said, well, you know, maybe it's nerves or, you know, I don't know. I said, it'll pass. And then 8 o'clock, the headache just, I mean, really, really, unlike a headache that I've ever had in my life. It was the most incredible pressure buildup, and it wasn't on the surface. It wasn't if I had a pen, I could have probably touched it. It felt like it was like about an inch into my skull, you know, into the brain itself. And, you know, about the size of a dime, I could put my, like, pinky on it and say, it just feels like it's going to blow up there. My wife asked me, well, with the Johnson & Johnson side effects that they reported, were there anything about blood clots? And I go, absolutely nothing. There was nothing. It was AstraZeneca that had blood clots. They said Johnson & Johnson, the only side effects you were going to have on this thing was a sore arm and, you know, maybe a slight temperature. There was nothing about blood clots. So, you know, she goes to bed early. So, you know, about 9 o'clock she goes to bed. And then as the night progressed, you know, the body aches started getting worse. I mean, it just felt like I got hit by a truck, right? And then the ringing in the ears got louder. The headache was still there, just getting worse. And then the most bizarre thing occurred about 11 o'clock. I'm sitting on my recliner, and the bottom of my left foot felt as if somebody had grabbed it and was taking an ice pick and just jamming it into it. The pain was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. it was like a constant Charlie horse, but beyond that, it was like a stabbing pain in the bottom of my soul. I said, I can't sit on the recliner. I said, I'm going to go to sleep. You know, maybe I can fall asleep and then I'll just sleep this thing off. So, you know, fever is 102, 11:30, going to bed, I'm shivering, shaking, try to lay still, and it kept more bizarre. So I'm laying there, and all of a sudden, my chest starts twitching. I mean, it looked like I was pregnant. In the middle of my chest, I've got my body, it's like pulsating and jerking side to side. It was like the movie Alien. I mean, that's the best way. It was the most bizarre thing I had ever seen. And it didn't hurt, but it was bizarre. So I got back out of bed. It's 1:30 in the morning now, and took my oxygen. It was down to 95. I was in bad shape. Now I'm at the point now. I've got the rain in the ears. My head feels like it's going to explode. I got my chest looking like the creature Alien's going to be bursting out of it, and I got something stabbing my foot. And I start getting, like, wheezy, like I feel like I'm going to pass out. And I'm debating with myself at that point. Do I call 911? You know, do I drive myself to the emergency room? You know, I'm not even going to be able to make it up the stairs to wake up my wife. And I was desperate. And as I'm kind of hunched over my little bookshelf, there's a picture of the good Lord, you know, Christ, that my sister had given me 25 years ago. And it was called The Masterpiece. And it was painted by a woman by the name of Bette Myers. And she did it like in 30 minutes under like divine inspiration. Beautiful, beautiful picture. And so I'm leaned over. I mean, I'm like, you know, John, you are a real jackass. You should have just gone to the hospital when, as soon as this stuff started, you're going to die. And, you're going to die here. And I looked at that picture, and I said, Lord, I really screwed up here. My heart was telling me I shouldn't have taken that vaccine. I took it. I'm really screwed here. You know I can't do anything about it, but I need your help. And as soon as I ended the word help, Jeremy, everything stopped. It stopped. The headache was gone. The pain was gone. The ringing in the ears was gone. It wasn't like it was a gradual thing. It just stopped. And so I'm standing there now, you know, gazing into the eyes of my Lord on this picture, and I know what just happened. I mean, I asked him for help, and he didn't
you
think
got,
I was going to think
got
about
God's
it.
Divine intervention.
Yeah. It wasn't, I'm going to think about it, or I'll take care of it over the next couple of days. It was just as if, you know, written in like the books of old and the Bible. He simply said it, and it was done. And so now I'm just like, what the? I answered it like, what the heck just happened? But I knew what happened. And so I went outside, had a cigarette, and I was just contemplating what just happened. I said, you know, I'm gonna go back upstairs and go to sleep. And I went right to bed. Woke up, the bed was soaking wet. My wife came in and said, what the heck happened here? And so she's, you know, helping me clean it because I'm ripping the sheets off and, you know, the mattress pad. I mean, the bed was drenched from everything I'd gone through the night before. And I felt absolutely perfect the next day. And you don't wait a couple of days.
Have you since then, John, have you had any issues that you think may be related to that vaccine since that day that you prayed?
I got COVID 4 months later, right? So in August, I got COVID. But I don't blame it on the vaccine failing.
I want to get to that.
Yeah.
But if you don't mind, real quick, I want to ask Chris. We're about, I don't know, about 40 minutes into you on here. And I want to ask Chris. Chris, is there any questions thus far or comments that you want to make up to this point?
Well, seems to me it doesn't work real well if you got COVID 4 months after. You know, you get the side effects, and then you still get COVID, and you still have the ability to transmit it.
I think the story that John's going to tell you now, after he got the COVID, about ZPAC and all that stuff, this will really interest you also, because this wasn't just isolated at vaccine adverse side effects. This was our whole government, media, and medical systems following a bureaucratic ran government agency called the CDC and their recommendations. And Fauci's, whatever the hell that was called. I can never remember all the damn letters, but go ahead and continue, John.
Yeah, but you're exactly right. So a week afterwards, I wrote my blog article, my COVID vaccine story, and immediately shadow banned on Twitter. You know, Facebook gave me a restriction, said I was spreading misinformation. Now, throughout the whole process of the vaccine process, the CDC had the VSafe app, all right, which is you enrolled in so that they could monitor all the different various side effects and really, you know, provide transparency to the public on the information that was being shared on the app. And so they would text you, you know, once, twice a day, whatever, and say, what have you experienced? What have you experienced? And so I documented this thing to the T, just like so many tens of thousands of other people. By the way, I don't think that information's ever been released by the CDC, because that is different than the VAERS data. And there have been lawsuits to get the VSafe data, and I have yet to see it. So I don't know, you know, where that stands, or if they've just buried in bureaucracy somewhere. So I then went it was after I got COVID in August of 2021, you know, which was only 4 months after the shot. But again, I asked the good Lord to undo the vaccine for me, and he did. So, you know, whether it was the vaccine or not, my wife got COVID as well. So she didn't have divine intervention. So the vaccine definitely failed for her. So I went in to update the VSafe app, and it wouldn't let me log in. So I did a whole thing, recovery, said, account doesn't exist. The CDC deleted my entire report, deleted me from their system. And so, but the other thing was when I had COVID, you know, I had an earache, and I had a little fever. And so I called my primary care physician and said, hey, look, you know, I got an earache. Can you get me ZPAC? Oh, no, that's related to COVID. I was like, there's not a single case documented where an earache wasn't caused by a bacteria. I said, you're abandoning basic medical 101 here. Sign me a ZPAC. Wouldn't do it. So then I called Teladoc. Teladoc did it over the phone for me. Got my ZPAC. Fever was gone 24 hours. And then when I went for my physical, you know, a year later, the doctor actually apologized for the way that was handled to me, which, you know, surprisingly. But, you know, for those that don't know me, I've been involved in government a very long time. You know, I ran for Congress in 94 against Congressman Richie Neal, who was chairman of Ways and Means. I was 28 years old. I'd stayed involved. I lost, of course. I'm a Republican in Massachusetts. I think I'm one of the only ones left. But, you know, it was insane. It was insane how these politicians and bureaucrats handled this. I mean, I'd worked a lot with a lot of good people, especially in the emergency management agencies. They had plans set up. They had all these different protocols set up. And all of that was overridden by bureaucrats who were responding on the politics of fear. And they were ruling by fear. And my own governor, who was Republican, Charlie Baker, you know, no longer have any kind of friendship with him at all. He totally went off the rails. He just totally put aside all data and truth, and then he starts issuing all these mandates on the vaccines. And at that point, right, so after my experience, I just became very vocal against these vaccine mandates, because you have to remember, throughout this whole thing, they were denying that natural immunity existed to COVID, and that people that got COVID were still going to get, supposed to get the vaccine. And the people that were having the worst side effects from the vaccine were the people that had COVID and were forced to get the vaccines. This country went insane, and we're still insane. We've never overcome the madness. And as long as you have these socialist communists that, who have infiltrated the government pushing this for their own ulterior motives, we're not going to get better. We're going to have dysfunction.
And I don't think people understand exactly how we've been infiltrated.
One of the most popular articles that I have on my blog are the 45 Communist Goals. It was written into the Congressional Record. As a matter of fact, I think it was probably 60 years ago to the day. I think it was like January 6th of 63. And by a congressman in Florida called William Herzog. And he actually read it into the Congressional Record. And it actually outlined what their goals were for the next 50 years and the 45 goals. And you should read it, because it is scary how many of these things have come to fruition. And the way you're able to do that, right,
subject,
is the educational
John,
system. Excuse me?
Let me ask you a real quick question. Well, sure. A couple here. I have a couple questions. Going back to the starting of your story, when you talked about you're not against vaccines, and I am not either, by the way, traditional vaccines. However, I started putting two and two together. As of late, we started hearing the term adult sudden death syndrome. SADS. It's sudden adult death syndrome, SADS.
Yep.
When I heard SADS, all of a sudden it clicked in my head, SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. And I thought to myself, could it be that every vaccine ever manufactured, yes, some of them I do believe are good and do save a lot of lives, but did they know that there was going to be an acceptable death loss, according to what the government's terms are? Did they know that that would happen? So it made me question that. Yes, and you have to ask those questions. When I say that publicly, people will say to me, oh, my God, put your tinfoil hat away. In actuality, any good scientist in history asks questions. I'm not a scientist, by the way. I'm just a regular Joe Schmo that I care about the truth. But they belittle you, and they hurl insults, and they make you feel like you're the biggest idiot. They're compensating for their own fears and not asking any questions.
Yeah, when someone calls you a name or belittles you like that, it's because they don't have facts to hit you with, because the facts don't support them. And so it's a lot easier to try to humiliate you and use that social kind of peer pressure and embarrass you. But they cannot produce facts or data to support their positions. When we were kids, what did we get? Maybe six vaccines? These kids say it's like 20-30. I went to get an updated tetanus shot literally 2 years ago. I got the tetanus shot because I'm always playing with metal, right? You don't want rusty metal. Tetanus is not good. I found out afterwards there were two other vaccines in that tetanus shot. There was whooping cough and something else. They didn't tell me that. And so now,
they didn't disclose
that. Kennedy has done a great job with just talking about the rates of autism since they've been combining, and they keep making more and more of these vaccines and putting them into these concoctions. Not even, there's no doubt out there. What is the interaction? When you put three or four vaccines in a six-month-old infant, what is the effect?
Exactly.
But, you know, this government
I think we're
going to
find out
run by
a
money.
Whole slew of information as we now that our radars are up and people are starting to ask a lot of questions, and you're seeing a lot of censorship, you're seeing a lot of backtracking, a lot of flip-flopping, and a lot of trying to discredit people. They'll start attacking them personally. Look at Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Robert Malone,
right? Exactly.
Is basically, at the very least, the co-creator of the mRNA vaccine. I
yep.
was fortunate enough to be on a Zoom call with Dr. Robert Malone while we were planning the People's Convoy. And I think, Chris, you were on that too, weren't you, Chris?
No, I was not on that Zoom call. You told me about it,
oh,
but I wasn't on it.
Okay. But anyway, as we were in the process of planning the People's Convoy, we had numerous world-renowned doctors on there, including Dr. Robert Malone. Numerous organizations, the Children's Health Network, the Children's Health Defense Network.
Yep.
And I apologize for not getting their name right. There's so many names that I've gone through in the last 6 months. My head is a jumbled mess. But anyway, Dr. Robert Malone even admitted that he received one mRNA vaccine or jab, and he advised against getting it. And Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Ryan Cole, there's a handful of doctors that have warned against this, and now they're really speaking out. Now that that Elon Musk took over Twitter and essentially took away that censorship aspect of it for the most part, and they are able to get the truth out there. The problem with this is the propaganda and the damage has been done to the people that were following along blindly. There's many people like yourself, though, that followed, quote-unquote, the science, so to speak, and did what you were, you know, you felt at the time that you were educated in making or making a decision that was educated because of based off of the science that you heard. Now we're finding out that the science wasn't necessarily the science, but basically paid propaganda by Big Pharma. And I think
exactly.
That's where we're at today. Yeah, what we're going to have to do now is figure out how the hell do we hold these people accountable when I'm a big guy, a guy that studies the World Economic Forum. Like I have an incessant need for that because I know what they're up to. It's one of those things that just like remdesivir, all of a sudden I heard something that didn't sound right. I got to go check these guys out. The World Economic Forum, Klaus Schwab has bragged about governments worldwide that they have placed his young global leaders in. Canada's got over 40% of their parliament. The United States, we are infiltrated with them. McCarthy is of a young global leader, part of the World Economic Forum. As much as you know, some people hate me for saying that, I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not here for your feelings. I'm here to tell you the truth. And the truth does hurt. And I'm sorry that it hurts because it hurts me too. But we have to get to the bottom of this before it's too late. And we're teeter-tottering on that line. And these vaccines and the COVID measures that have taken place in a free country that is protected by the Constitution, that many, many, many government officials just went along with, and I don't know if they went along with it as much as they probably were directed to. You talked about nursing homes and hospitals and those kind of places where the elderly were put at risk, and yeah. I found out that the governor of Minnesota, the governor of Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, there's a couple other states that are unfortunately blue states, and I hate to say it that way because I don't want to make it a political thing, but it is. They inserted COVID-positive patients into the nursing homes
exactly.
and numerous healthcare facilities. And if you look,
yeah, well,
if you dig
Cuomo's the poster boy.
You will find that. What's that?
Governor Cuomo of New York is the poster boy for that.
New York. Yes, he was one of them. New York, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Minnesota. There's what's the other? I can't remember what the other one was. But it happened.
Ever made sense. And now, right, the beautiful thing about truth is history will always vindicate it. And as more and more time goes by, and, right, you have the Twitter files, right, Malone, again, is uncensored. You have so much truth coming out. It's not what people don't understand is you don't take pride in saying, see, I told you so.
You
were vocal because you were trying to save lives. You were trying to help your neighbor. And for them not to realize that, it's frustrating.
Yes, it is. Chris, what do you want to add anything to this conversation at this point, Chris?
I believe our other co-host has arrived.
Oh, Mr. Darrell. Let's bring him on here. One second. Darrell, are you there?
Sure.
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Have you been listening at all?
No, I was working on the truck. I had a bolt come apart, and I thought something was going on with the transmission, and I was fueling up over here at McAllister, Oklahoma, and noticed a bolt came off of the bracket, so everyone's leaning forward, and was hitting the. I'm here. People at Atwood. Okay, I want to say this real quick. The people at Atwood Home and Ranch up here in McAllister, Oklahoma, thank you very much for helping me out, because if you guys didn't help me out, I'd be stranded right now. I was able to get my hardware.
I'll give you time. Hey, I'll give you time later to do that. But right now we haven't got stuff online.
And your guest, I was listening on your guest, and he is right, and you're right too. Don't feel sorry for telling the truth about McCarthy, because McCarthy, he's a lot of the elites, and he's part of the problem. He is part of that that organization. And if you don't believe him, look it up. He does not hide it. He is part of it. And we just don't ever be sorry for telling the truth. Screw that. If they can't handle it, then that's their damn problem.
I can tell you right now that the pushing of this vaccine, I've watched numerous interviews with Bill Gates and the World Health Organization, and you know, there's many things, and John, I think this is a conversation you and I are probably going to agree with each other quite a bit, and maybe not. I don't know. I'm going to say it anyway. But there's a lot of things that Trump has said that I've thought. I'm like, why would he do that? Like even the endorsement of Kevin McCarthy. But here's one thing that Trump did that really I look back at. I'm like, he took the United States out of the World Health Organization. We don't want to be a part of that. And the liberal crowd, the Democrats, they come unglued at this. Well, anything that Trump did, I mean, he could have ate a cheeseburger on a Saturday and they would have called it racist. But anyway,
yeah, exactly.
He took us out of the World Health Organization. Why? I used to be anti-Trump. Everybody knows this. I don't hide that. I was very anti-Trump. You know why? Because I believed in the mainstream media. I watched every single news article, and I watched the news constantly. So I was, quote-unquote, well-informed. Well, it turns out that I was being brainwashed. And people are like, they chuckle when I say that. I'm being serious. It's called the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, put into effect in 2012 under Obama. Basically, it essentially makes it legalized state-run propaganda through our own media sources. Smith-Mundt Act went into place to prevent what happened in Nazi Germany here in America back in the early 40s by a senator from South Dakota named Mundt, and I don't remember where Smith was from. But they put this act, the Smith-Mundt Act, into place so there wasn't state-run propaganda through our media sources. In 2012, in a defense bill, or the Defense Act, I should say, the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act was inserted. And now the media claims it was one of the most bipartisan bills ever passed. No.
Yeah.
The Defense Act was.
No, was it?
But the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act was never voted on. It was inserted into a bill, which they are doing every single time that you see them, the omnibus bill. They have so many tag-ons in there. Oh, hey, I need a trillion-dollar bridge over here in Georgia. I'll vote for your $1.7 trillion omnibus spending bill if you give me that. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is what our government has turned into. And I have said for a very long time, enough with this add-on, tag-on bullshit. It's time that we have standalone bills. Everything gets voted on standalone. That's how it should be. But our government doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So what are your thoughts on that, John?
You're right. As I said a little earlier, everything in government is motivated by money. Right? You got to follow the money. And I think there's a great lesson that we can learn from Elon Musk buying Twitter. Right? Until you can oust the people that are controlling the media through the legal, peaceful processes that are in place in this country to do so, they will continue to push their agendas and influence the masses whose attention span is about 144 characters. And so, right, the people with the gold make the rules. And so Jeff Bezos buys a bunch of newspapers, right? You know, the people that are controlling the narrative right now are doing so to protect their own wealth. And so you need to beat them at their own game.
Jeff Bezos owns
people
Washington
like us are
Post,
working
correct?
Stiffs. Right? Most people like us are working stiffs. We don't have time to run for office. We're too busy feeding our families, going to, you know, family events, going to gymnastics and basketball games and football games, right, and taking care of our own and trying to pay the bills. Where the people on the left are being subsidized by the people who they've elected. So people have basically, the politicians have bribed these people for their votes, right? Let me give you a stimulus check before an election. Or let me forgive your student loans before an election. And that's illegal. That's bribery. Getting away with it while we're building the country and paying the bills. And so we need to become smarter. We need to use our resources to help others like Elon Musk take over other media sources so that this propaganda stops.
I signed up for Twitter Blue just for that reason. And everybody's like, you just want the blue check mark. I don't got a blue check mark. And honestly, I could give two shits less about a blue check mark. I did it because I want to support a free speech platform.
Exactly.
I've been banned off of Facebook 20 times. I've been banned off of TikTok 10 times. I'm tired of being censored, basically.
Yep. And that's the reason why I did your program. I have never spoken publicly about my whole JJ, vaccine story here. But I believe what you're doing here through the podcast and your radio show is the future. This is how people are going to get fair, accurate, unbiased information and be able to look at a story from 360 degrees so that they can find the truth and make the right decision for them and their families.
And we appreciate that. I mean, I do.
Yeah.
We do appreciate that, John. Now, let me ask, Jeff Bezos owns Washington Post. Am I correct on that?
Yep.
Yes. So now I want the audience to understand something. They have bought most 98% of our media, including local newspapers.
Yep.
Everything comes down from the top. And everything that you read in your local newspaper that you see on CNN, Fox News, whatever, there's maybe a slight variant in different areas. But they have literally bought 97 to 98% of our media sources. So basically, almost everything that you see is some sort of propaganda in some sense. And, and people just don't understand that. Like my folks are in their mid-60s to late 60s, and and they say, well, we watch the news. I said, you got to quit watching TV. The news isn't the news. It's not the news that we when Walter Cronkite was on. It's not the same news. Now,
exactly.
They are pushing whatever they need you. They want you, whatever they want you to know, that's what they're going to push. Whatever they think
exactly.
you will believe, that's what they're going to push. I haven't watched the
and
news in
all sides
over
are guilty of it. All sides are guilty of it. I mean, if you would if you were to try to find a news story on, okay, what is actually going on in Europe and the Ukraine war today? You know, or, you know, what is going on with the markets or issues of substance, it's almost impossible to find. So that's why people like yourself and me and probably many of your listeners spend so much time on the Internet looking through all – I bet you probably go through 40 to 50 news sources every day looking through headlines.
You wouldn't even
see what's going
on.
That's
an understatement. Would I have time?
Right?
Oh, you wouldn't believe it. It would drive a sane person mad. You know, you and my girlfriend, well, she'll look at me and she'll be like, oh, my God, man, just lay off a little bit. But I have an incessant need to find that truth. It drives me nuts.
Exactly.
But, you know, while we're speaking about
our
Ukraine, I'm glad you brought that up. Because, Chris, didn't you just donate some of your money to Ukraine?
Yeah, I sent my entire entire check over there, you know, for the last several weeks now, and they still haven't sent me a Ukrainian flag profile pic. I'm kind of upset.
We had to break it up with a little humor because Chris sent his hard-earned tax dollars over there. Now he's waiting for his Ukrainian profile pic.
Well, you know I came up with a different plan. Now, instead of me sending my hard-earned money over there, I'm actually going to propose a bill to my congressman that would tax all the people that don't need to work anymore and are able to get by during this labor shortage. I'm going to propose like a 98% tax on whatever the hell money they're getting, and we send that to Ukraine.
There you go. I'm in with that. Yeah. John, I got to move on with another story, and about Sean Hartman from Canada. His dad Dan was going to call in tonight, but he was unable to due to unforeseen circumstances. But here's what I'm going to offer you: if you'd like to stay on live with us, and I'll keep your mic up, and you can comment as I read the story, you're welcome to. Otherwise, if you got to go, and I understand that too, but that's up to you, John.
Yeah, what I'll do is I'll jump off. I'll listen because it's a terrible, terrible story with you know Dan and his son Sean there, and I will listen and I'll continue to listen to your podcast. And I wish you the best of luck, and I appreciate you having me.
Hey, John, thank you so much for coming on tonight and taking the time to share your story. And these are pre-recorded radio shows, so people can go back and re-listen to them. And if you want to share the link out, just the link I sent you, you just share that out after this the show ends. That within a few minutes, it's usually uploaded on blogtalkradio.com, so they can go back and re-listen to it. We also download our episodes onto Spotify. So we are on Spotify also. And our producer, Kim, who's not here tonight, did inform us that we are in the top 95 percentile of radio shows that are similar to ours. So that's a good thing. We do have a lot of listeners on Spotify, so that's a good thing. But, no, we appreciate, John, we surely appreciate you coming on here and sharing your story. And I'm very glad to have met you and or not have met you, but met your acquaintance. Let's put it that way. And we wish you the very best, and I hope that you have no more adverse side effects and you can live out your life to the fullest, and maybe we'll be in touch in the near future. I'm sure I'd like to have you on again to talk about some of your political experiences because we kind of dabble in that also, obviously, but if you
all right, if you ever
want
to know
that,
how things are working behind the scenes or what's really going on sometimes, give me a call.
I will definitely be getting a hold of you here in the near future about another episode where we can have you on to talk about some of your experiences, you know, working behind the scenes, because it's very interesting, and I think people can learn a lot from what your experience has been. So in a lot more ways than one. But, John,
right.
Thank you so much
Sounds
for coming
good.
On tonight, and God bless you, brother.
All right. Same to you and your listeners. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, too. All right, everybody. That was John Breyer, and he's from Massachusetts. He's got one hell of a story, and you can follow him on Twitter at John, that's capital J-O-H-N, capital B-R-I-A-R-E. Go and look at his profile on Twitter, and right at the top in his bio, you can click on his whole story. I looked at some of it last night, and I was just like, wow, this guy's been involved in a lot of stuff in his life, and a very, very interesting fellow, and again, what a story. What did you think of that story, Chris?
Unfortunately, it's typical. I mean, these stories are abound. They're all over the place. You know, we know the censorship is happening. They're suppressing these stories, you know, but there's an old saying that, you know, you can only hide the truth for so long. You know, eventually the truth starts getting out, so.
Yeah, when I was down at the People's Convoy, you don't even know how many people, like this one lady pulled up in her pickup truck, and she had tears in her eyes, and she goes, do you know where I can find Brian Brazzi? And Brian Brazzi was the main spokesperson for the People's Convoy. And I said, I can get you in touch with him. I was the one that was responsible for bringing Brian Brazzi on board the People's Convoy. And she looked at me like she was in shock. And she goes, this is my husband. And I looked in her pickup, and she had an urn sitting in between her driver's seat and passenger seat. And she said he was treated with remdesivir. I said, oh, my God, do I need to talk to you? There's so many stories I heard down there, down to People's Convoy. That was just one of them. She was just a wonderful soul. And everybody that I've talked to, just wonderful people. But, Chris, can I ask you a favor? I need to take a 2-minute break for me for a second. I'll mute my phone. Would you lead us into the story with Sean Hartman by reading that article that I sent over to you? And then I'll be back before you get done with that. And then I'd like to get into a discussion about Sean Hartman and his dad Dan and the censorship that's going on. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, I'll kind of summarize the article and what it's about.
Yeah, the rarefoundation.com, the cover up, yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, go ahead, Chris. I'm gonna mute my phone for just a couple minutes.
All right, sounds good. This was a terrible story of it's about a young man, a 17-year-old, and he was a hockey player. And basically, if he wanted to play hockey, the rules where they were was that in order to access the arena to practice with his hockey team and to play the games, the proof of vaccination was required. And this was literally the only reason that that Sean is the young man's name, Sean Hartman, and his dad is Dan Hartman. That was the only reason that they chose to vaccinate their 17-year-old son. And, immediately after receiving the shot, there were some side effects, some adverse effects that took place. And it was only, I believe, 22 days after receiving the vaccine that his parents found him dead in his bedroom one morning.
Holy shit. Yeah, yeah. And they had – they during the autopsy, they found that his heart was slightly enlarged. But I believe they ruled – I'm trying to remember slightly. They could not determine the cause of with certainty was the ruling of the local court. And so the father, Dan Hartman, he sent the autopsy report to a well-known pathologist who shall remain unnamed.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to be named out of fear of losing his job.
Right.
But that pathologist believed Sean's death to be the result from the experimental mRNA gene therapy injection, which is what the so-called vaccine actually is. It is experimental. It is an mRNA technology, and it's a gene therapy, not a traditional vaccine. And so there was a public hearing where people were coming in to have kind of a town hall type setting to discuss the COVID restrictions and the effectiveness, et cetera. And the father, Dan, he went in and spoke at this meeting, this hearing, and he told the story of his son and that a pathologist, you know, had attributed his death to complications from the mRNA injection. And what ended up happening was they videotaped for him, a public forum, but when they uploaded the video of that hearing, they completely edited out Dan Hartman's story about his son's death. And so this was the Toronto City Council Board of Health. And, of course, the father asked, you know, why was this removed? And there was a little bit of public controversy over it. And what ended up was the Board of Health came out and said they removed his testimony because it disclosed the personal health information of a minor without authorization.
Hey, I don't mean to interrupt, Chris, but Daryl, I did shut your mic off. There's a lot of background noise going on, so you are muted right now. Just text me when you're done doing whatever you're doing. That's okay. I get it. You got things you got to do, but go ahead, Chris.
So yeah, that was it. They literally removed his portion of this public forum from the video that was posted publicly, citing the fact that he was releasing the personal health information of a minor without authorization. Of course, the minor couldn't give authorization because the minor in this case was dead. And, of course, legally would be the one that would give that authorization, and he was the one telling the story. So this was kind of a bullshit reason, justification. That was kind of I think that was more of a, we're not going to let the public see this. Let's see if we can figure out some reason to give for justification. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. Sean got his first shot of Pfizer on August 25th. He went to the hospital on August 29th with a bad reaction. He got sent home with only a prescription of Advil. He had a rash all over his neck, his face, and he had brown circles around his eyes. I've watched Dan's interviews that he has done, and I want to tell you something. It's heart-wrenching. I couldn't even imagine what pain he's feeling right now. But when I seen answers for Sean on Twitter, and I started going through it, and I thought to myself, you know what? I've been fighting for people like this for a very long time. When the vaccine started rolling out, I seen a lot of people being especially from Canada, families in Minnesota, or not Minnesota, families in the United States, and they were separated from their families in Canada and vice versa, weren't allowed because of vaccine mandates. I don't know what it did, but it lit a fire up under my ass. And that's when I did that slow roll up to Pembina, North Dakota in support of getting rid of these mandates between Canada and the United States. Well, it turns out Canada gets rid of it, but the United States doesn't because we're under that kind of rule. Anyway, let's get back to Sean's story, because I told Dan that since he wasn't able to call in tonight, I wanted us to be Dan's voice and Sean's voice. The Toronto City Council's Board of Health Secretary, Julie Lavertu, claims they removed, like you said, Chris, they removed Mr. Hartman's testimony because it disclosed the personal health information of a minor without authorization. That's what she claims. Now, I want you to let that sink in for a second. The Toronto City Council's Board of Health Secretary, Julie Lavertu, claims they removed Mr. Hartman's testimony because it disclosed the personal health information of a minor without authorization. That's Dan's son. The last time I checked, you don't need to have authorization if you're the parent, if you're the legal guardian. I mean, I get it. That was in Canada. Maybe things are different. I doubt it, but it was an excuse. Now, I want to say something about Dan. Dan has been censored, similar to John. He's been censored all over social media, big tech, prior Twitter. Now, with Elon Musk, Dan is able to get Sean's story out there, which is I think it's a godsend for Dan, because Dan, he's having a tough time dealing with this, and rightfully so, because he's not getting the truth. Nobody's taking responsibility for what they've done to his family, what they've done to what they've done to Sean's life, number one, and what they've done to Dan's life. They've completely uprooted and destroyed Dan. Like, he's obviously he's consumed about this. And it's his son. The pictures he posts of him and his son every single day. I miss you. I love you. Dude, our worldwide governments are doing this to people, and you want to deny it. Well, people have heart attacks all the time, or people die all the time at young ages. No, they don't. Not in these numbers. Did you know that last month alone, the UK had 22,000 in 1 month excess deaths? 22,000? You have athletes dropping over with heart attacks, cardiac arrests, left and right, soccer players, perfectly healthy. Oh, that's been happening for years. It has. Not at these numbers, though. Something put it on a fast track. Let me read what this Julie Lavertu, or whatever the F her name is. This is what they wrote. Following last week's Board of Health meeting, the city clerks, this is, by the way, this is dated January 17th, 2022. By the way, this was on January 17th, 2022. January 28th, I believe, is when I did my slow roll and up to Pembina, North Dakota. Started with four trucks, ended up with over 50 vehicles and about 120 people. This is what she wrote, Toronto Board of Health meeting. Following last week's Board of Health meeting, the city clerk's office received a complaint that one of the public speakers at the meeting disclosed the personal health information of a minor without authorization. We reviewed the complaint and consulted with our colleagues in privacy and information. Their review confirmed it was personal health information being shared without consent and confirmed it should be removed. The video edit required us to remove the entire speaker, but the individual is still listed as having spoken in the minutes, the official meeting record. Regards, Julie. Regards, Julie, you communist. Since Miss Luvertu's letter, Sean Hartman's death has started to gain international attention, and rightfully so. In response, it seems Toronto City's Council's Board of Health has removed the entire meeting from all of its channels. All of it. That's what they did. This is what they're doing to Dan Hartman. This is what they're doing to Sean Hartman's memory. They are trying to erase him. And people like me and Sean's dad, Dan, we will not allow this to happen. We will speak from the mountaintops, regardless of the consequences. You can send your goons after us. You can censor us. You can do whatever you want to do to us. But we will not stop screaming from the mountaintops for justice for people like Sean and for people like Dan. I am done with all of the censorship, bullshit, communist, worldwide, WEF, crock of shit. I tell you what, I get so angry. And here's the kicker. Dan couldn't even sue Pfizer. He's not allowed to sue Pfizer. Why is that? If your product was so goddamn grand and wonderful, if there's a problem, why shouldn't you be held accountable for it? Excuse me for saying goddamn, because I don't like saying that word. It's not good, but I apologize. But I do have a trucker's mouth. But I'm gonna say something. That this really gets me going, because this isn't Sean's story is not the only one I've heard. I've heard hundreds of stories. I've had people call me from the state of South Dakota crying on the phone because she hasn't seen her family in over 2 years because of mandates. But I get it. Her family's still alive. But I talked to that woman down at the People's Convoy. Her husband's gone. He's dead. There's no bringing them back because of your need, your incessant need to have power over the population, your incessant need to fill your back pockets so you can enjoy the lavish things in life while us peasants just pay you taxes blindly. Sean deserves answers. Dan deserves answers. Everybody that has been affected by this negatively deserve answers. And before I continue with this and give it back to Chris here, I want to give Dan a little bit of help if I can. I'm going to share his Give, Send, Go up. He does have one up. Dan had to take an extensive amount of time off of work. And it's been a little over a year, I believe, since Sean's death. And Dan is obviously, he's still struggling with this. And rightfully so. And I watched the interview where he said, you know, I had to go back to work. I had to pay bills. And I have to stop and cry because it hurts so bad. I feel Dan's pain. I've seen it in his eyes. I see it. I shouldn't say I feel his pain because there's no way I could. But I understand. I don't even understand it. I see his pain. There's the correct words. And for those of you listening, if you want to help out Dan Hartman, please go to GiveSendGo and search in loving memory of Sean Hartman. That's S-E-A-N, Sean, H-A-R-T-M-A-N, Sean Hartman, in loving memory of Sean Hartman. There's a video on there. And also go to Twitter and look up at the at symbol answers, A-N-S-W-E-R-S, and then the number 4, all one word here, S-E-A-N. Answers for Sean. Look through those photos. Look through the interviews. Look through the videos. Dan is one of many people that deserve not only our empathy and sympathy, but our help for what the government, for what the media, and what Big Pharma has done to his family. Dan's life will never ever be the same because Big Pharma, the media, and our governments worldwide, they stole that from him because of their incessant need for greed. Chris, what say you? And I'm going to turn Daryl's mic back on, too.
I think in the very near future, the words aiding and abetting are going to be used in a lot of legal documents. That's what I think. There were a lot of people complicit in this.
Oh, and it's, Daryl, by the way, your mic's back on, my brother. Sorry, I had to mute you but there was so much background noise. I it was just becoming a distraction. But no big deal.
It's all right. Just let me know.
Yeah, no. No, Chris, you're right. I constantly tweet out about the Nuremberg trials, and you see the Nuremberg 2.0 will trend on Twitter on occasion, and this is exactly what that is, and it's not limited to your government officials. This is worldwide governments, Australia, New Zealand, United States, Canada. It's worldwide, and when we talk about the World Economic Forum, this is who we're talking about. These people care about one thing, about control. They're narcissistic sociopaths, and somehow they have infiltrated governments worldwide. And people, when they hear this, are like, "Oh my God, this guy's fucking nuts." No. I've done enough research on them to know who they are and what they are. They are they're sly, they're witty, they're quick, they're a lot smarter than you and I will ever be, obviously because they've infiltrated governments worldwide. Now you look at the financial institutions that back them, and you can go right to the worldeconomicforum.org and go to their financial partners. And you can read every single one of them, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and every single one of the fucking vaccine manufacturers are financial partners for the World Economic Forum. Every single one. And what's funny about this is AstraZeneca was mainly rolled out in Canada and Australia, I believe. Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, America, New Zealand, I believe it was New Zealand, Germany. If you go back and research lockdown measures through the COVID-19 pandemic, I don't even like calling it a pandemic because the pandemic was not COVID-19. The pandemic is the fucking vaccine. And this is where I benefit on having an uncensored radio show because I speak right what's on my mind. And if you don't like my language, I'm sorry that you don't like my language, but this is how I talk because I'm pissed, and you should be too. If you knew the things that we knew, the F word would be the least of your worries. Trust me. These people have committed mass genocide and are continuing to, and are continuing way more than what they have already. Trust me, their plans. Bill Gates said the next pandemic will really wake people up. The next pandemic. When's the last time you heard the word pandemic? The Spanish flu? Now all of a sudden, that's becoming common day, or commonplace, just like misinformation and disinformation. Now all of a sudden, this is our normal conversation, pandemics, misinformation and disinformation. Is that what it is now? And yet some of you still can't understand what the fuck is really happening? What is it going to take for you to wake up? I've been asking that question for a year and a half. What is it going to take until it happens to you? Well, listen, Dan Hartman, he lost his son, Sean.
it happened to him. Dan, he wasn't against vaccines. John, he wasn't against vaccines. He took an educated approach, waited to see, wanted to see what they come up, and they, by God, they come out with Johnson & Johnson, a one-shot deal. And him and his wife discussed it, and even though he felt in his heart, in his soul, that he shouldn't take that vaccine, they made an educated decision based off of the information they received. From who? The propagandists involving our media, our government, and now I know that our healthcare systems will sell out for a fucking dime, too. All of them deserve to be tried under the Nuremberg Code, every fucking last one of them. And I don't care if that gets me in trouble for saying it, but every single one of them, they have killed people. They have killed people. All right, I went off on my rant, Chris. Go for it, brother.
Yeah, you did go off on a little rant here, and it was a well-deserved rant. And I mean, I don't know. I'm still amazed that there are people that haven't caught on at this point. The amount of information that's out there, you know, I mean, it's in your face. They're not even denying some of the things any longer. You know, the Twitter files is huge, exposing a lot of this stuff, you know, with proof, with screenshots of the conversations that were going on back and forth between Twitter executives and federal agents and everything else. And there's still that disconnect. There's still people that honestly believe that the only thing that the Twitter file exposed was that Twitter removed naked pictures of Hunter Biden. You know, it's quite the game. I mean, control of information is something else, and it's unfathomable to me. I thought for sure we had learned enough lessons from the 1930s to never allow this type of, you know, public manipulation to ever happen again. Obviously, I was wrong. I don't know. Daryl, what do you think?
Well, here's my thing. Well, I gotta say my disclaimer. Number one, I don't do Cheng Biden, and number two, I didn't vote for your ass, and I'm still black, so there you go. So go F yourself. Now, the way I look...
Hold on now. You caught me off guard there. You can't be doing that. You can't just come out like guns are all blazing, man. I mean, Jesus. You got to give me a second to, like, wait, what?
Well, this time I only used one gun. I didn't use both of them. I'm not running.
Oh, you got one person in the room to clap.
I found it.
Well, you know, and also on all of this, I mean, okay, right now you look at the average ordinary person. They're up there busting their ass just to make ends meet. And I think there's a lot of people they want to know what's going on. But right now you got, unfortunately, like our dipshit governor and stupid-ass mayor of Denver, the state is now beginning to charge 10 cents per bag. So everybody's trying to figure out, okay, what we're going to do. And they're not really paying attention to the fact of this, of the vaccine. Well, I'm not even going to call it vaccine, of the shot. But then you look at the commercials that's going on. It's always take the shot, or they make it seem like it's a great thing that you take the shot, or hey, yay, let's jump up and down and yell yahoo and let's grab each other's butt and we took the shot together, yay. But you don't see the enthusiasm for saying, hey, here's the truth. Like, for instance, when you go get your vaccine, ask your doctor, hey, can I see the ingredients on it? Because if there's no ingredients on it, guess what? Don't take the damn thing. Am I on here?
And that's the thing. Okay. They didn't list potential side effects. They didn't list. It was a blank sheet of paper inside the vaccines.
because they know what the side effects are.
Absolutely.
They don't want you to know about it because if the American people, if they put it out there, if they just put it out there and say, hey, these are the side effects, da-da-da, just like with smoking. If they put it out there, majority of the people would have been like, you know what, you're not putting that shit in my arm. Go F yourself. But since they didn't, and a lot of people didn't know to say, hey, can I see what's in it? A lot of our people are so misinformed, and it's purposely done for them to be misinformed, so they cannot get educated, and they will not know what to ask for or what to look for.
It's called implied consent. It's called implied consent. And that is one of the biggest things in the Nuremberg Code, implied consent.
Yep.
They made that mandatory, that from now on, you cannot mandate any kind of medication or drugs without implied consent, and they stole it from you, which means they're guilty under the Nuremberg Code, every fucking last one of them. The media that pushed it, the doctors that pushed it, the government officials that pushed it, every last one of them. And I've seen pictures of what happened to the nurses and the doctors and the media and the politicians that did this during the Nuremberg trials. Guess what those pictures showed? They were hanging from the fucking gallows. Understand that, people. They didn't mess around. They didn't wait for a human rights group to come up and say, well, that's cruel and unusual punishment. No, they hung them in the gallows. Why? Because they killed people intentionally for profit, for power. That's what they did in the late 30s and 40s, ladies and gentlemen.
But you know the funny thing about all this? And you may laugh at me about it. If you do, go ahead. I don't give a shit. But you know what? Hollywood kind of told you what was going on a long time ago with some of their movies. Because you look at some of these movies that was made in the future. Where's the people who are rich? Where are they? They're on top of the atmosphere or some shit like that. And where's the poor people? The poor people down there in the garbage. Look at what happened on the last Transformer movies. Who sold America out? Who sold the world out? It was the elite, the rich people. They did. But you sit back, you look at it, and you're like, well, you know, it's a movie. And they're like, we're telling you what's going on, and here it is. You had Donald Trump. He was telling you what's going on. Here it is. You have so many people trying to tell you what's going on, but the problem is now we have all this. You got people wanting to mutilate our kids, turn them from boys to girls, girls to boys. They don't know what's going on. We got the mental issue problems going on.
Daryl, they're not pedophiles, though. They're minor attracted people. Persons.
No, fuck that. They're pedophiles.
Minor attracted persons. That's what the media is telling us that we need to call them from now on. That's what the government is telling us that we need to call them from now on. They're minor attracted persons. You have to be politically correct, Daryl. Otherwise, you're a xenophobic bigot.
Well, I'll tell you what.
You're racist.
You can go ahead. You can dress a pig up in red lipstick, a pearl necklace, high heel shoes, and it's still what? A damn pig. It stinks like a pig. It looks like a pig, and it walks like a pig. Don't give a damn. It's a freaking pig, people. I don't give. You know what? You can take your little labels and all that and shove it up your ass. Because really, I don't give a shit. Because I'm going to tell you the truth. Whether you like it or not, I'll tell it to Biden. Tell it to Kamala Ding Dong Harris, Maxine Waters. I'll tell it to that stupid mayor we have in Denver. I'll tell his ass the same thing, Hancock. I don't care because you know what? I'm not afraid of all these people. You can try to counsel me. Guess what? You won't be able to counsel me. Why?
You know
because I'm big, I'm black, and I don't give a damn. And I got you guys backing me up.
You know what, Daryl? You're showing off your age.
Yep.
You're showing off your age a little bit.
Why, because I'm a grumpy fucker?
No, and here's the reason you're showing your age. Only us old people believe that shove it up your ass is an insult, because to the new generation, that's like an invite to a party.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right. Yeah, you are correct about that.
Well, based off of my rants and Daryl's rant, just because of our two rants, this is what we're going to hear after the radio show ends tonight. Oh my God. FBI. Can we speak to you, sir?
Yeah.
You want a cup of coffee?
You want the Danish? How about some cheese?
Yeah.
I got some crackers.
You know, you brought up something, though, Daryl, since we're kind of in a free-for-all here, and I kind of like this, just, like, yelling at each other, even though we're not yelling at each other. We're just hyped up.
Right.
You brought up inflation. And when you bring up the argument about inflation, about the Biden inflation, and his supporters go, it's happening worldwide. And I just get that look. You know that meme with that little girl? She just gets that look like, hey, dummy. Yeah. Yeah, it's worldwide.
Yeah.
You know why? It's a planned event, you fucking moron. I mean,
exactly.
You go look at the worldeconomicforum.org. You'll understand it all. And don't look at the pretty little pictures that they put in there. And their 15-minute zones that they're implementing all over the world where you can ride a bike or walk 15 minutes within your home. They have everything that you need. You don't need to leave. They give you permits 100 days, up to 100 days a year to travel outside of your 15-minute zone. And
they don't do that in the hood.
At given time, they can put electronic gates. They have them installed where they shut the electronic gates. You can't leave the city at all. That's why they want everybody to move to suburbia. That's why they want everybody in the metropolitan areas. That's
why
Bill
Gates
in China is buying up all the fucking farmland, you morons. Hey, we're trying to tell you something, but you're too stupid to listen. And I'm sorry to say but I've been doing this for too long. Go ahead, Daryl.
Okay, and let's also go with the part of you people, how you vote. Because a lot of you people, you voted these dumbasses in. Because, I got to vote because they're a Democrat. Oh, I got to vote them because they're a Republican. Oh, even though you don't like them, you're still going to vote them in. So some of it, y'all, is your damn fault. On some of it, it is. But on one part, I got to hand it to you, though. Because, like you said, you were all anti-Trump and everything until all of a sudden you kind of got your head out of the media's butt and you're like, wait a minute. The light's on, and you motherfuckers have been lying to me all this time. Let me see stuff for myself.
You want to know what woke me up? Like the fire underneath me. We did a protest down in D.C. in 2020. We had over 200 trucks sitting on Constitution Avenue at any given time for 21 straight days. Over 200. At one time, we estimated over 1,000. At one point, I come back from the hotel room when Sean was still involved with us, and Sean was down there the whole time. God bless his soul, brother. I mean, he was down there. And we went to the hotel room so him and his wife could take a shower. On our way back, it started raining out a little bit. And as Sean and Crystal was getting in this truck, two guys in suits showed up, and I was standing outside. I'm like, oh, fuck, I'm going to jail. And he said, who's responsible for this? And I said, well, we are. And the one guy brought a big, huge bag from out behind his back. It had a presidential seal on it. And then in that bag, I mean, it was a big, large shopping bag that you'd get at one of the, big shopping places. Whatever. Anyway, it was big. But it had the presidential seal on it. And inside that bag, there was dozens and dozens and dozens of hats. Make America Great, USA. There's numerous messages on these hats. And the Secret Service agent said to me, President Trump sees you. He knows you're here. And he wanted to show you a token of his appreciation that he stands with the truckers. And he gave us those hats. Okay. Now, about a week and a half later, I had left. Sean stayed, and numerous other people stayed that whole 21 days. Secret Service came out again, and they handed out Hershey Kisses in a bag with a presidential seal on it to each and every single truck that was out there in Constitution Avenue. Everyone. And the dumb, ignorant people in our industry said, oh, would you get some hats and some Hershey Kisses? They failed to realize that never in the history of the United States of America has protesters been given gifts from a sitting United States president in Washington, D.C. Ever. Never. We made history in 2020. They don't get that. What would you get changed? The hours of service got changed within 6 days of us being there. Well, that was already being, it was already on the table. No, it was tabled.
No, it was not.
That thing was on the table. The 8-2-7-3 split, yeah, that was because of us. They gave us something. They gave us something. As minor as it was something. And the gifts from a sitting United States president. People cannot understand the gravity of that. That's huge. Mm-hmm. And at all costs, the media tried to discredit everything that we were doing out there. They wouldn't even bring us up until Trump was doing an interview in the Rose Garden, and we started blaring out our horns, like loud. That's all you could hear. You couldn't even hear the interview. And Trump stopped the interview and said, "Did you hear that?" And media says, "Yeah, what is that?" He goes, "That's the truckers. They love me." And right away, CNN was out on Constitution Avenue, said, "Trump said that you guys are out here for him. Do you love Trump?" And a good majority of them were Trump voters and Trump supporters, but everybody's like, "No, we're not out here for him." And they're like, "See, Trump lied. Truckers are in D.C., but Trump said it was there for him." And all of a sudden, the light went off in my head with all the things that went off. I'm like, wow. They are truly trying to twist and turn anything that he does or says. They didn't say anything about the gifts that he gave us. All they said, they just wanted to prove that he was telling a lie. And I thought, did Trump do that purposely? Did he or didn't he? I don't know that answer. But it sure makes one think. That's all I'm going to say. Chris, I mean, you've seen and heard all about all that stuff. And even like with the People's Convoy, with the media, at first we got media coverage, and all of a sudden, nothing. The media truly is the enemy of the people. I believe that.
Well, the media was only there for us or with us anytime they could take something we were doing and turn it against Trump. And I remember after the whole Black Smoke Matters thing back in, what was that? That was 2019. And I had organized the whole Chicago protest. And the thing of it was, we were going to Trump Tower. Now, we weren't going to Trump Tower as any kind of indictment against Trump. We pretty much figured, because our goal was to get national media coverage to bring attention to what we were protesting against, which was Obama era regulations that was passed under MAP 21. But we figured, okay, if we're going to get media attention, the way to do that is to go to Trump Tower, right? And so, of course, we got shut down from being able to go to Trump Tower. We got limited coverage. But then NBC sent some reporters. They got in contact with some of the organizers of the whole Black Smoke Matters thing, not just the Chicago protests, but all of them that we had all over the country, you know, from coast to coast. And I was not able to attend that interview. It was kind of put out there of, hey, whoever can get down here for this meeting, you know, come on down. And so there was like, I think, eight guys. We know some of them, you know, really well. You know, like I know James Toler was there. Obviously, Joe Denny was there, some others. But I had the advantage because I was, you know, connected to this whole group. I got to see the entire, like, hour and 10-minute-long video of the interview that took place with these reporters that were – they were said to be from NBC. So I got to see the entire, like, 70-minute-long interview that took place, right? Then it turns out it wasn't – the story didn't run on NBC Nightly News, like they said. It ended up running on MSNBC – which is, of course, communist hell television, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when MSNBC ran it, they took, there was maybe 60 to 90 seconds of that entire 70-minute-long interview. that they had edited in, along with their own narration and explanation of what was going on. They took that group and they turned it into Truckers Against Trump.
Against taxes.
It was so far removed thing that we had been fighting for at that point for 2 years. It was so far removed from the actual message we were trying to get out there and just totally taken and twisted out of context. I mean, not just a little bit out of context. I mean, like, they took 1% of the truth and then just, like, completely fucking fabricated 99% of the story to fit their narrative of what they wanted.
Yep.
And that is what aired on the MSNBC national nightly news. And I mean, we obviously took a lot of criticism for that. But, I mean, it's, what happens out there is a damn shame. And that's not the first time I've been a part of things that had national media attention. All I can say is if you're watching anything from the mainstream media, for the love of God, recognize that it's maybe 1 to 10% accurate, and the rest of it is just filled in with what, however they want to spin it. These people are
Chris,
just pathological liars.
When you guys did that slow roll in Chicago, I was watching it live on Facebook, and I don't know why I remember this, but I remember because that was after you and I had met in when we did our first slow roll together in St. Paul, Minnesota, to the Capitol. I believe it was shortly after that, wasn't it, Chris? That was for the 418 shutdown.
Yeah.
In 2018. Or for whatever day it was. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, 419. Same date as the start of the Civil War.
Yeah, okay. So you guys, it was shortly after I'd met you the first time. And you guys did that slow roll in Chicago. And I remember you guys were all up in Moni, Illinois at the Petro, correct?
Yep.
Yep. And you guys took off from there, and you rolled into Chicago, and you got on the loop. And I remember watching that live, and I remember watching you were in a vehicle to lead him off, and everybody else was in the trucks. You had quite a few trucks. And I don't remember why I remember this, but I remember I made a comment, and I said, "Go get him, brother," or something like that. And your wife said that to you, and you kind of smirked a little bit, but you didn't say nothing. And I seen your eyes like going a million miles an hour, up, down, sideways. And the reason his eyes are going all over because he was being escorted by at least 20 Illinois state police. Helicopters in the air. Every single exit was blocked off with a tow truck and Illinois State Police blocking their First Amendment rights of freedom
and
of speech and Chicago police and blocking their constitutional rights of peacefully assembly. They wouldn't let them off the interstate. Not only wouldn't they let them off the interstate, they wouldn't let the general public off the interstate. Every exit to downtown was blocked off by either a state police,
right,
Chicago police, and a tow truck.
That's what
your government is up to, ladies and gentlemen.
They were so afraid that we were going to cause a traffic jam on one street in Chicago, East Ohio Avenue, which is one of the main arteries that sees all kinds of traffic. It sees thousands of trucks a day on a regular, you know, on a regular day-to-day basis. They were so afraid that our little convoy was going to cause a traffic jam, which is bullshit, that they decided to just completely cordon off all traffic's ability to get into downtown Chicago, causing a massive traffic jam out there on the interstate. You know, I mean, it was ridiculous. And, yes, there were... I believe I counted 5 different helicopters. I know that one of those helicopters was WGN-9 Chicago, and they were actually for a while giving a live feed on their national channel, an aerial view of our convoy coming in. The other 4, I do believe, were state police and Cook County helicopters. So law enforcement. And there was no less than 200 law enforcement officers involved in blocking all of those intersections. It was like multiple cop cars and tow trucks at every single exit that gave you any access to downtown. And again, when the city of Chicago gave their press release as to why they blocked the exit, they gave this big story about, we blocked them because commercial trucks, large trucks, are banned on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, sure.
And, of course, all the comments, everybody's jumping in, yeah, that's right. You know, Michigan Avenue is a congested traffic street, and you can't have big trucks on it. The problem is we were never going to be on Michigan Avenue, and they damn well knew that from the beginning, because you did not need to hit Michigan Avenue to go to Trump Tower from the interstate. But that's how they do it. They throw a lie out there, something that's plausible, something that people could fall for, that they can believe, and the overwhelming majority of people swallow it hook, line, and sinker. And then, you know, when we tried to defend ourselves and tried to go public with our own statement that we were never going to be on Michigan Avenue, it just gets drowned out. It gets suppressed. Nobody gets to hear the rebuttal.
Let me give some references here for our audience. If you guys want to, like, go back and look at what me and Chris and numerous other people have been involved with, Google search these things, okay? And you can actually find them on Google. And if you can't find them on Google, go over to DuckDuckGo. And if you can't find them there, I don't know what to tell you. But anyway, go look up Chicago Slow Roll, S-L-O-W, Slow, R-O-L-L, Roll, Slow Roll, 2018. Go look up Chicago Slow Roll 2020.
19.
Because they did one. 2020. Because it was right before we went to D.C. in 2020. You had over 150 trucks, I believe.
No, it was 2000. The big slow rolls that we did were 2019. It
okay.
was at 4/12/19.
Yeah,
I got
just
the
look
date
up.
Wrong. It was 4/19.
You guys have done like two or three of them in Chicago, correct?
No, actually, there was another one, and you are right. There was one in 2020. There was another one that started off at a truck stop actually in Chicago.
Oh, that was Jerry, wasn't it?
That was, Daniel and Sparky were big on setting that up. I didn't get to participate in that one, but I did do the video promotions for them. And
okay.
That was being done in conjunction with healthcare workers.
Okay, yeah. So, but go look that up. And then some of the stuff that I've been involved with, you can look up the Sioux Falls, South Dakota Slow Roll. That one, we had eight trucks. Eight. That's all we had. That one got picked up by the AP News Network. That went worldwide. Look up that. Look up the Pembina, North Dakota Slow Roll. Look up the Joplin, Missouri slow roll. Look up the Indianapolis, Indiana slow rolls. There's been numerous ones. I've only been involved in one there. There's been slow rolls all over the country from truckers that me and Chris are very, very well associated with. Have we planned every one of them? No. Have we been involved with a lot of the planning in some of them? Yes. Look at Washington, D.C. 2022 truckers on Constitution Avenue. Look up the People's Convoy. You're going to find a lot of things. And the People's Convoy, there was so much controversy surrounding that. We've touched on that a million times, and I really don't even want to get into that anymore because there's so much lies and it's from people that are jealous, people that are pissed off because their name wasn't brought up and they didn't get the attention. Basically, it's from people that didn't get enough hugs for mommy when they were a baby. And I really don't want to talk about it anymore. We've talked it to death, honestly. We have numerous episodes that have Brian Brazzi, we have Mike Landis, we have all of those guys on numerous episodes. Go back and listen to our shows. You'll find them. We've been involved with a lot of different things. What's that? The fuck was that?
we all of a sudden had a girl on here or something?
Yeah. I don't know. I heard
Yeah, I turned that down. That was my GPS jumped on and said something. It didn't do my bidding. I told it to be quiet.
You know what, Chris? I think we're gonna have to take a vote live on air.
There we go.
Do we? What do we do with Daryl? We're gonna have to do something with this guy.
What you gonna do with? Oh boy! Oh, okay, take on the lone Negro.
You know what?
No.
I'm gonna send him a paper atlas so his GPS will shut up.
You know what? I do have an atlas in here. I got a 23.
I don't determine all this
technology
all the time.
You
got to
look at it that way, okay? You just got to look at it. That's all you can do anymore.
Oh Lord, here we go.
We got 43 minutes left of the show, and we went over like our normal two-hour thing. But I see Sean McIntosh wants to get on the air. And if you guys are up for it, I'm up for it. Are you guys in for it, Chris?
Of course.
Daryl?
Yeah, come on. All right.
You know what?
Bring your mom.
I'm going to be taking off here in the next few minutes because I'm in the Eastern time zone, and I got an early start in the morning.
Oh, shit.
But,
yeah, I got you.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's bring the caller on.
Yeah,
right.
I put the brakes on.
I'm going to bring Sean on right now. Hold on 1 second. All right, Sean, you're on air, brother. What's going on, brother?
Hey, y'all. What's going on? We're just trucking, man.
Right on. Sean was a very instrumental part in the Disrespected Trucker from the very beginning. Sean helped organize the Sioux Falls Slow Roll, and he was a very big participant in that.
Yeah, there was only five of us. There was five trucks, Jeremy.
Oh, five? Is that
and
all it was?
One of those trucks dropped off at Mitchell, and my wife came in to finish it up. We had five all the way.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the one we got picked up by the AP News. That was pretty cool. But Sean was also very instrumental in May Day of 2020.
We
honestly,
had 69 trucks, and we slipped in there at 3 a.m. in the morning, and when the motherfuckers woke up, we woke them up with the SOS on the air horn. We were already there.
Yeah,
they couldn't get,
and they didn't dare ask
they could, we had two guys that were bobtail that worked for two of the biggest wrecking outfits in the whole country and all the way up to New York. And they all band together, and they wouldn't send any big fucking wreckers in there.
But we have to give credit where credit is due. All that planning was done by Rick Santiago, right? Right, Sean? All of it.
Yeah. You bet. You see how his fucking deal went. Now, I'll give credit where credit's due. There was a whole handful of people that planned and executed that right there. It wasn't one person. One person kind of gathered up a whole bunch of other people. I'll put it plain and simple. When I said I would do it, I prayed about it, my wife and I, because everybody was against me doing it. I mean, even Jeremy and Tony went, "Oh, fuck, really?" We're going to do this, I guess. And we prayed about it. The next day, I woke up and got a piece of paper, and I wrote down a bunch of names. And out of 12 names, I only knew who six of them were. The other six, I had to research and find out who they were, but I called every single name on there. Now, every one of them had some kind of vital information, and some of them had a lot of vital information and inside connections that got us down there without being harassed.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you
something. It took an awful lot of planning,
that,
and none of that planning, I'll tell you the God's honest truth, not one single bit of that planning right there was done by Rick Santiago.
No.
Not
I want to tell you. I want to tell the audience something about May Day of 2020. that was probably one of the biggest events that I've ever taken part of, and one of my proudest events that I've been a part of. For the simple fact that it was unified. There was people down there from Cuban descent, from Eastern European countries. Every single ethnicity was down there, and it brought people together. And May Day of 2020 was one of the most amazing events, honestly, that I've ever been a part of, and I will never forget that. My son still has that.
Well, let me tell you about that.
Yeah.
That whole deal, you know, we started out with 69 trucks. We kept over 100 on the fucking street for 21 days, and there was upwards of 200 down there at any given time. Now, let me tell you about that. That took 7 days. 7 days exactly, Jeremy, and you know it. From the night I said on the phone call that I'd go, in 7 days we rolled in that motherfucker with 69 trucks.
Yep. But now I want people to understand something. Now, hold on, Sean. I want people to understand something. Guys like Sean, me, and everybody that participated in that event down in D.C. in 2020, we had 200 trucks, and we estimate over 1,000 up to 3,000 within a three-week period that came in and out, that maybe stayed for a day or half a day, because I met numerous people that were there that did that. I want people to understand something. We have 3.6 million drivers in this industry, and 3.6 million drivers, out of those 3.6 million, a couple thousand stood up. You know what the rest did? Well, there was a consensus with some, just you guys go ahead and go down there, I got money to make. That was one of the things I heard.
Yep.
The other one was, what are you crying about now? From our own industry, by the way. What are you crying about now? That was another thing I heard. What are some of the things that you heard, Sean, from our own industry?
Oh, hell. It's the same shit you hear in everything. If they weren't directly involved in it or their name's not in it, they're going to run it down. Or they're going to try to run in there and be the hero.
Yeah, and that's our country right now. That's our whole country in a nutshell. I'm not going to put out any names because there's some names that came down there as later that basically told us on the phone that if you mention our name, you guys are out of this coalition that we were trying to get involved with, and they ended up showing up. I ended up standing with one of those guys, and I'm not going to say, again, I don't want to put their names out there. It doesn't matter. But if he's listening to this, he knows who he is. He actually rolled with me in Pembina, North Dakota. I went down to Indianapolis with him to the capital there. And I think he's a pretty decent guy. In my opinion, he's a decent guy. And I've stood side by side with him, and I don't have nothing bad to say about him. There's another guy there that was there that I'm not too fond of, but it doesn't matter what their names are. What I'm trying to get to is there's a lot of infighting in just the small group of people that we were involved with because everybody wanted to have their name on the headline. And the bottom line is, it pushed out guys like me, it pushed out guys like Sean, it pushed out guys like Tony, it pushed out a lot of us that got sick and tired of having that infighting and forgetting about what we're doing, what we're trying to do.
Yep.
And if we could have stuck together and been unified, we could have probably got something done. Another guy, and I'll mention his name because I appreciate him, is Joe Denny. Joe's gotten pushed out of it too. Joe has an unconventional way of handling himself. That's the way he does it. And everybody gets pissed at him. Well, giving the middle finger ain't going to get unity. Listen, he's not out there to make friends. He's out there to tell the FMCSA exactly what he thinks about him and what he feels about him. And that's his opinion, and that he has the right to do that. And at first, I disagreed with how his antics were too. And now I understand it. Now I do the same thing.
because I'm tired of it. But that's what we've been involved with, ladies and gentlemen. You know, the whole reason I brought this up and we kind of moved into this is because we were talking about vaccine injuries earlier in the show. And we were talking about, you know, all the stuff that's going on with COVID-19. This turned into something for me way different than I ever imagined it ever would be. I started out as going to the state capitol in St. Paul, Minnesota, for standing against the ELD mandate because I believed in it. And I thought, I got to stand up for this because this is what I believe in, and that's my God-given right. That's where it started, and it turned into numerous events with the trucking industry. And when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, it turned into me standing up for the trucking industry to standing up for healthcare workers, because I went to St. Paul Capitol again and stood with thousands of healthcare workers. And then it's turned into a human rights issue where I was getting phone calls, and I haven't seen my family in 2 years. I can't do nothing. I said, I'm going to do a slow roll from Fargo, North Dakota, up to Pembina, North Dakota, to the border in support of our Canadian friends that were having a freedom convoy fighting against mandates. And I called my friend Tony. Said, Tony, you want to do it? Oh, fuck, okay. Well, and then a couple other guys got involved with us, and before you knew it, we had 50 vehicles going up there. It started with just four of us. And now it's turned into fighting for our rights, fighting for our Constitution, which is a big reason I was involved with the People's Convoy. The People's Convoy, it was a fucking mess. In the very beginning, until I got out, and when I got out, it was like a load of bricks was off my shoulders because I didn't have to deal with the absolutely fucking sanity. People, they acted like two-year-olds, and I'm not going to say names on there either, and I tell you what, I'm not even friends with a lot of the people that I was used to be close with anymore, but it doesn't matter. It wasn't just them. It was people in general. Because there was a different idea being floated around that it wasn't their idea, then rather than saying, well, I disagree with you, oh, no, you're a thief, or you're embezzling money, or you're doing this, or you're doing that, and I wasn't even involved. Like, my name wasn't even involved with any of the financial aspects of that convoy. I wasn't even close to being involved. But yet, even to this day, I'm still being accused of that. That's how fucking crazy people are. That's how nuts this has all gotten. Our country is in deep trouble. I'm not worried about who's going to send me $20 so I can put gas in my car to make. I'll pay for my own gas. Thank you very much. I've done it every event. I paid for my own way.
That's exactly what I've done. Everything I've done has been on my dime, and a lot of my dime too. If you'll remember right, I kept a motel down there for 21 days, a nice fucking motel that I never slept in, but everybody could go take a shower.
You bought a motel, yes. You rented a hotel room. And by the way, Sean and his wife, Crystal, they borrowed me, they rented me a room for, what was it, 3 or 4 nights, Sean?
Yeah,
three or four,
I don't even know. Yeah.
Yeah, and then I paid them back when I got home, but they did that. But we've done this out of our own wallets, ladies and gentlemen. This whole time, we've done this out of our own wallets. The People's Convoy was the only event that I was ever involved with, per se, except I wasn't really involved. I mean, I was, but I wasn't toward the end, if that makes any sense. That there was a shitload of money involved. Millions and millions and millions of dollars were donated to an account that I had zero, my name was nowhere near it, and I made that very clear from the beginning because I've seen what happened with the Freedom Convoy in Canada. Anybody's name that was attached to that fundraising account were scrutinized and criticized so brutally. And I said, I don't want to be a part of that because I'm a grassroots guy. I'm not about that shit. I mean, I get it. I mean, I understand that you have to have some kind of financing to do something like that. But I didn't want to be involved in that part of it. I wanted to be a part of the planning of it, the execution of it, not the financing part. I didn't want anything to do with that. Never have and never will be. Like, even when we were down in D.C. in 2020, remember they wanted to start a GoFundMe because there's so many people down there.
Yep.
We didn't have a public restroom because it was during COVID. Yep. And we were against it. And finally they talked us into it, said, we won't put it under your name. We'll put it under our name. Would you please at least share it? And I said, we've always said from the beginning, we won't get involved with any kind of GoFundMe or anything like that. We made an exception in 2020 because all those guys were down there, men and women, were down there. They weren't working. They weren't being fed. They weren't getting showers. We needed some kind of help to make sure. And numerous people stood up in big ways, donated food. It turned out that they started grilling breakfast, lunch, and dinner for every single buddy down there. This is the best part about it. This is the greatest part about 2020. When they started grilling on the trucks and started feeding every trucker down there from donated goods.
And the homeless that was down there.
And the homeless. Now, I'm getting to that. The truckers also they grilled out and fed the homeless, Secret Service, D.C. Metro Police. They all stopped. They all got a bratwurst. They all got
Parks
a hamburger.
Police.
They all got – or what?
The Parks Police, too. All the police officers down there. And everybody that was on the street down there, if they wanted something to eat when it came to meal time, they had something to eat. There was plenty to eat for everybody.
Yep. And you guys – the Eastern Europeans even cooked their authentic food. And Eastern Europeans were, they wanted to be called Eastern Europeans. We called them Russians. They didn't like that. They weren't Russian. They were Eastern Europeans, and a majority of them came from the Ukraine. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And so we honored their wishes. Okay. You don't like being called Russians? Okay. My bad. Insensitive on our part, but a majority of them came from Ukraine, and they made their authentic dishes, and you guys celebrated birthday parties down there for different people. It turned into one big unifying event for everybody. It was amazing. So yeah, if you guys want to go look that up, though, to our audience. There's numerous things that Sean's been involved with, I've been involved with, Chris has been involved with, Daryl. The only thing he's really done is run for lieutenant governor of Colorado, and then he served our great country.
Just be a big
and then,
black man. It's just
yeah.
What he is.
And he was a police officer.
Yeah, and go ahead and attack Polis and all these people that are in office in Denver, Colorado, who are no good, and go ahead and stand up to these stupid shots and I'm not going to call them a vaccine because vaccine is something that works. These are shots. These shots kill people. But when I was running, though, I always mentioned that I was a truck driver and that we should support the convoy. And dude, I'm telling you right now, there's a lot of people in Colorado. They were supporting the convoy. A lot of people were supporting it, and they understood what was going on. So I'm very proud of that with folks from Colorado. Thank you.
We were at the Colorado Capitol with a small convoy.
Oh, we did.
And Daryl was there and spoke.
Yep.
But hey, Sean, I got to wrap the show up, my friend, and thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts.
You bet.
And, we'll talk to you later, my man.
Y'all have a great day.
See you on the road, Sean.
Yep. See you.
All right, brother.
All right, everybody. That was Sean McIntosh. He was in the very beginning with the disrespected trucker with me and Tony. We did a lot of things together, and through the stress of things that happened throughout our involvement, it broke apart. But yeah, we didn't talk for a while, but we we started talking again, and we're going to leave it at that. And I don't care what happened in the past. The past is the past for a reason. It's called a rear view mirror for a reason. There's a windshield. We don't look at what's going to happen in the future. And Sean has been very instrumental in a lot of things that has happened with trucking advocacy.
That's true.
But that being said, I just want to I want to give my final thoughts, Daryl, and I'll give you a few minutes. We're down. We're getting real close to where we're just going to get cut off, which doesn't happen very often. My final thoughts, ladies and gentlemen, is John Breyer and his story, a wonderful story. Not a wonderful story as far as, oh, yeah, that's great, you know, but a wonderful story as in it gives you facts. It gives you, if you look or listen back to the beginning of the show, it will give you his mindset from the very beginning of this pandemic, much like the rest of ours, to the middle of it, to when he took the vaccine, to now. And regardless of if he's a Republican or Democrat, the political parties don't matter. What matters is he was listening. He was listening to direction by the CDC and government officials that lied to him. And then we go over to the story of Sean Hartman and his dad, Dan. And his dad, Dan, is having a horrible time with Sean's death. By the way, that is understandable. Sean was 17 years old when he passed. He loved hockey. He took a year off from hockey, and he went and took the required vaccines in order to play hockey again because he loved hockey that much. Little did his family know that decision would cost him his life. And now Dan is all he's asking for in order for him to get to his grieving process, which he deserves, is answers. Why is my son dead? And honestly, that should be all of our question. Why is Sean dead? And why isn't nobody being held accountable? Why isn't nobody answering for it? Why is Dan being censored? Why is Dan's interview or his comment period in the Toronto Health Board, why is that removed? Why is Pfizer not able to be sued over this? There's a million questions that need to be asked. A million questions that are legitimate questions and reasonable questions. Not accusatory, but reasonable questions. Why? That is the big question that we're all asking right now. Why? I think that I know a lot of those answers. Well, I don't know the answers, but I think I know who's responsible for it. Let's put it that way. And I think what their agenda, I know what their agenda is and their motivation is. And I think John F. Kennedy knew that many, many years ago, many decades ago.
Yep.
And he was for it. And we've been called a conspiracy theorist for many, 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 many years. But now us conspiracy theorists, it's funny that a lot of the things that we've been preaching about are starting to come true. Maybe we knew something or know something more than what you think we do. And I call that the undying need to find the truth. So my final thoughts on this matter is, first of all, thank you, John Breyer and Dan Hartman, for allowing me to share the story of your son, Sean, and may he rest in peace. And God bless you too, Dan. We really surely feel for you. And again, go check out his GoSendGo. Go to his Twitter account and if you don't have a Twitter account, create a generic one. Just go check his Twitter account out and please donate to the guy. He's had a really rough time with this, and he deserves our support. As a matter of fact, I'm going to go in and donate some money tomorrow when I get my money put in my bank account. But go check him out on Twitter at answers with the number 4, answers for Sean. That's ANSWERS, the number 4,
S-E-A-N. And go look at his heart-wrenching posts. And let's show Dan our support in the name of Sean. So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, Darryl must be in a bad area, but he just dropped. That's our show. We went way, way, way over what we normally do. Roughly, it's going to be close to 40, 50 minutes. But that's okay. Sometimes you have to go over the – we like to keep it around 2 hours. But tonight we decided to just extend that a little bit. We had a lot to talk about. So on that note, again, thank you, John Breyer and Sean. Rest in peace, my friend, and Dan. I truly hope that we can help find answers for you and people start being held accountable for this. And we will never and we will not stop or back down, and we will continue to talk about these issues until we start seeing action. All right. Thank you for joining the Disrespected Trucker Radio Show on every Thursday night at 7 p.m. live and uncensored. Only here on blogtalkradio.com. And again, thank you all for listening. Have a great night, and God bless each and every one of you.
Have you ever had one of those days when nothing goes right? Your wife starts bitching about whatever it was she was bitching about last night. So you escape into the bathroom just to sit there on your throne. But after you finish your business, the toilet paper's gone. Well, it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. It's a bad day, so you better get off of my back. You might get cold cock if you cross my path. It's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. Well, I was running late for work, so I poured me some coffee to go. Just before I had a flat tire, I spilled it all over my clothes. When the highway patrolman pulled up, I thought the help was on the way. But when he saw that tire tool in my hand, he shot me with pepper spray. Well, it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. It's a bad day, so you better get off of my back. You might get cold cocked if you cross my path. 'Cause it's a great day for me to whoop somebody's ass. When I finally made it to work, I was 15 minutes late. I told my boss about the flat tire, but he fired me anyway. So here I am in the parking lot, just waiting by his Corvette. I'm gonna give him a goodbye present that he never will forget.